The Lord be with you.
And with your spirit.
A reading from the Holy Gospel according to Matthew.
Glory to you, Lord.
Jesus again in reply spoke to the chief priests and the elders of the people in parables, saying, "The kingdom of heaven may be likened to a king who gave a wedding feast for his son. He dispatched his servants to summon the invited guests to the feast, but they refused to come. A second time he sent other servants, saying, 'Tell those invited, behold, I have prepared my banquet, my calves and fatted cattle are killed, and everything is ready. Come to the feast.' Some ignored the invitation and went away, one to his farm, another to his business. The rest laid hold of his servants, mistreated them, and killed them. The king was enraged and sent his troops, destroyed those murderers, and burned their city. Then he said to his servants, 'The feast is ready, but those who were invited were not worthy to come. Go out, therefore, into the main roads and invite to the feast whomever you find.' The servants went out into the streets and gathered all they found, bad and good alike, and the hall was filled with guests. But when the king came in to meet the guests, he saw a man there not dressed in a wedding garment. The king said to him, 'My friend, how is it that you came in here without a wedding garment?' But he was reduced to silence. Then the king said to his attendants, 'Bind his hands and feet and cast him into the darkness outside, where there will be wailing and grinding of teeth. Many are invited, but few are chosen.'" The Gospel of the Lord. One of my favorite Hollywood musicals is My Fair Lady, based upon Pygmalion by George Bernard Shaw. And it's rather a line done in passing when Eliza Doolittle is first taken on by Henry Higgins to teach her to be a lady. She's dragged upstairs by the servants, led by Mrs. Pierce, the housekeeper, to be bathed, to which she is scandalized. Eliza is scandalized, to which Mrs. Pierce says, very passingly, "You can't be a nice girl inside if you're dirty on the outside." As a church, there are a certain group of people who, it seems, no matter what they do, whether they go to Mass on Sunday, pray every day, raise their children in faith, they will not be satisfied with the hope that they are going to heaven unless they are sure that someone else is going to hell. There's where you see them getting upset over, to a certain degree, maybe an extreme degree, over any hint that there might be any mercy for certain groups of people who don't live a moral life. I'm not saying that the immoral life is a good thing, but they just seem bound and determined that right at the heart of it is they have to know that someone's going to hell. On the other extreme, there are those who, it seems, have the disposition that no matter what they do, no matter what happens, God is merciful, God loves us all, everyone is going to heaven and everything's going to be just fine. We sing songs like "All Are Welcome," and they become favorites of ours. Then we have gospels such as today, in which all are invited, not all are worthy, and certainly not everyone is welcome. This is a gospel about those who are not welcome, when you really think about it. This is a gospel about those who don't make it into the wedding feast. First, you have those who are invited, but then they refuse to come. Then you have others who are invited, and they're said, "Well, I'm too busy with my business. I'm too busy with my family. I have other obligations. I have my farm," and they don't come. Then you have those who are dragged in, and it says very clearly, good and bad alike. And on the one hand, one might say, "Oh, wonderful, all are welcome, good and bad alike." But then there's the one who's not dressed for a wedding. And the story ends as it goes on throughout the entire story. Who is not welcome? Who is not included? That's what this parable is all about. And in many ways, at its heart, it should be a very unnerving one. To be a very unnerving one. Because it's not a parable in which it asks us the question, how are we worthy? How are we welcome? But perhaps it leads us to ask the question, which group do we fit into? Oh, all these groups, 1, 2, 3 at least, as examples of those who don't make it into the wedding feast. Some by their own choice, some by their own stubbornness, and some because, very simply, they were not of the proper disposition to be there. And it's a challenging gospel to all of us. Because if we had any guarantees that we were all going to heaven, how many of us would be here today at this time? No, keep your hands up so I can count. Why would we need to be here if it was all a guarantee? We have the hope of resurrection. We have the hope of going to heaven, but nowhere in the gospel does Jesus give any guarantee. Well, I correct that. Once, when he's on the cross and the good thief is told, "Today you'll be with me in paradise." But that good thief was also being crucified with Jesus and didn't have much living left to live. But nowhere else in the gospel does Jesus ever say, "You've made it." He says, "You're not far." He says, "If you want to be perfect." But most of the time he says, "Oh, you of little faith. I've never seen such faith like this among God's chosen people, among the people of Israel." Nowhere does he give us that guarantee because he doesn't want us to grow complacent. He doesn't want us to grow cavalier in our faith. And he gives us those challenges so that we can really keep an eye on ourselves. And according to a gospel a few weeks ago in which we're given a doctrine called fraternal correction, keep an eye on one another, so that we walk together toward that great banquet in the kingdom of heaven and understand ultimately by the grace of God, we will be welcome. All are invited, but not all are welcome. And so one question might be, how do we, especially those who are here, we obviously are answering God's call, we obviously come and want to worship, how do we continue to grow without growing complacent, without taking anything for granted, continue to grow in such a way as to make ourselves worthy? Because obviously there are spiritual dispositions spoken of in today's gospel, but there are also externals that he speaks of. It is obviously a spiritual disposition of people who simply say, "I'm invited, but I'm not coming." But it's an external action in which they're engaged in. Obviously, it's an internal disposition of those who are invited who are distracted by various things, their farm, their business, other things that keep them from coming. But it's an external action of not coming. And obviously, there's an internal disposition of the person who was not dressed for a wedding, but it was an external that was expressed. He was not dressed for that wedding. And think about that for a second. How many here have ever gone to a wedding feast of a friend or a family member wearing a tank top, shorts, and flip-flops? No, keep them up so I can count. No, none of us would. Heck, even in schools, there are dress codes where when one comes home from school, one changes one's clothes. Because we realize that an external also expresses an internal disposition, perhaps one we aren't even aware of, but when we see a definite change depending on how we behave externally. And perhaps one very simple way for any of us here is to ask ourselves, how do we dress when we come to Mass? What is the external that we have, that we show, that reflects or can reflect an internal disposition? Doesn't mean we love God any less, doesn't mean we don't want to be here, but how is it that we dress reflect a seriousness of what we are about here at a time of worship? Or does it reflect a cavalier attitude of something we do in passing to mark time or fulfill an obligation? It's to make no judgments of people's personal taste in clothes. But do we reflect our personal taste in clothes when we attend a wedding? In other words, our personal taste might be, you know, t-shirts, shorts, and sandals. But at a wedding, we aren't necessarily going to wear that because it would reflect a disposition of how seriously we take the event of a family wedding or a friend's wedding, things like that. How seriously we take our education on how we dress when we go to school, how we dress when we go to work. And the same can be asked in terms of how we dress when we come to Mass. Does it speak entirely to our internal disposition? No, not really, not at all sometimes, and not completely. But it can also affect even the slightest adjustment of what may already be a positive attitude to something that's much more improved as we continue to grow in this faith and in the practice of our faith. How we teach our children the disposition we all must have when we come here, not to gather simply as a social gathering, but to come and worship God and give this time seriously to God. Not as a cavalier action in which we pretty much go home and we don't change our clothes because we already are dressed for play or work, even when we come to Mass. But to have something as this banquet that we come to be something special, something that stands out in our day, something in which we have a different disposition than we do throughout the rest of the day, in which we dress differently than we do throughout the rest of the day, in which we would have to go home and change out of our church clothes into our play clothes, into our work clothes, because we have a very different disposition when we come here. And that is an external. I mean, because obviously none of us here are saying, oh, we're too busy. We're not among that group. None of us are saying, well, we've been invited, but we're not coming. Those are different groups, and obviously they're not here. And obviously we're not going to have our ushers go up and down the aisle and look at how people are dressed and kick them out if it isn't of their particular taste. Oh, some might be delighted to see that, I don't know, but that's not going to happen. But it is a very, very simple way in which we can look. What is the interior disposition we bring when we come to this banquet as God invites us to? We are among those who have said yes. We are among those who are here. But do we fit in to any of these groups who don't make it? What's the internal disposition that's reflected in the externals and how we dress? Just as Mrs. Pierce said to Eliza Doolittle, you can't be a nice girl inside if you're dirty on the outside. And that was step one of Henry Higgins turning Eliza Doolittle, that squashed cabbage leaf, into a lady. First, we bathe her on the outside and we dress her well. Let us look at that here as we come to the celebration of the Mass. As we come accepting God's invitation, in which all are welcome, what is the disposition in that we present ourselves to at least show the effort that we want to be worthy, that this is a time out of our day, that this is an important time and a special time in our day, and how that is reflected in how we dress and how we present ourselves before the sanctuary of God to come and receive His body and blood in this Eucharist. It's an unnerving parable. It's about those who don't make it into the wedding feast. But we are here, and we are called to grow further in not just the fact that we're here, but the worthiness of being here. And let us look at what externals we project of an internal disposition of coming to this banquet, preparing ourselves for the great wedding feast of heaven, and praying that by God's grace, and by our external behavior, we will be found not only invited, but worthy to be welcomed into God's wedding feast.